All right. Today's call is the content and our focus is about the art of communication and very specifically the art of asking questions. It impacts us in our relationship with our spouses, with our children, with our students, with those we mentor, with everyone we work with in our community. The ability to communicate is vital with our ability to impact others with our mentoring. And we're excited about today's content, and it's such a good review. When Anani and I reviewed what we're discussing, it's so wonderful to be able to take a look at our own relationships and say, yeah, oh my gosh, I so need this right now. It's so nice to review this each year and remind ourselves how to take our relationships to a level of trust and productivity and a feeling of being inspired in the relationships that we're in.
Now let me ask you, have you ever been in a conversation with someone and the conversation just did not go the way you had planned? Or have you ever been in a conversation with someone when you feel like it's just a one-way road, it got dammed up somewhere, and you were not heard? Or have you ever been in a group of people, and people are chatting, and you're listening and hearing what they're saying, and you're connecting, and you're excited about what they're saying, but when it comes time for them to hear and listen to you, something happened, you didn't get communicated, your thoughts or feelings didn't get communicated, and maybe you're feeling a little lost. Or have you been in a conversation with someone that you feel like, wow, that was the greatest conversation I have had in a long time. I feel like I know that person so well, and he or she knows me so well. Or you come away from a group experience where you just have this amazing aha because of the synergy that happened in that classroom or in that group. And you feel like, wow, it's changed my life. I can do something great with my life because now I have a new understanding. Isn't that an amazing place to be, Tiffany?
It is. I love it when I have a friend. Sometimes that happens in a group setting. Sometimes it can even happen one-on-one, that you have an aha. And, it takes and that's going to be specifically part of what we talk about. It's an art when you have a friend or a mentor who can actually lead you to ahas that have real impact in your life.
And I think the really key here, and we're going to get there, but I think the key here is the art of asking. So we're going to talk a little bit about the art of asking. I wanted to share something with you, though. I have a tendency to ask big questions. And sometimes there's no one specific place I can go to find the answer. Sometimes it takes a year to find the answer of it and to it. And I, in my pondering, I will keep asking the question, what does that look like? Or why is this way? And I get to the place where I really feel like I have to know the answer to it in order to get to the next step of my life. And I have discovered that, like I said, not one place is going to give me the answer to that question. And I have discovered that if I listen very carefully to the people around me and to my friends and associates and just neighbors, people who are maybe asking the exact same question, that I will eventually come to the answers to the question that I'm pondering and looking at. In fact, this year, I started out the beginning of this year with a huge question in my mind. And I'm not going to go into detail to explain the question, but what I want to explain is that it took probably 15 conversations with people for me to finally come to an understanding of the answer to the question. And all of a sudden, last week, in one conversation with a friend of mine, all of those conversations that I had for the last year came crashing in on me, and I started to have complete understanding, and the question was answered, and I knew exactly what to do.
Wow. So part of what you're saying here, Melody, is in our search for the way we want to live, sometimes it just doesn't happen all at once. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I remember being on a 3-year search. A question I had about, I mean, it's a pretty big question, about how to raise the children and what the difference was between the agency model and the force model. And it was a 3-year search mm-hmm. before I had a really specific understanding of the form that I was trying to study.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And what I've discovered is that lots of times, see, you're asking the question, what's the difference between the force model and the agency model, right? Well, you could
have that's not what I was asking, though.
Yeah,
well, I had to get to that one, but yeah.
Let's just go there for a minute, okay? You could have read Dr. Suzuki, and he could have told you, and he probably did, and you probably did, right?
Yeah.
But you still have the question in your mind. He answered a lot of questions for you. You still have the question in your mind because you had to apply it to yourself, right? So you
yeah.
could have gone to John Holt, and he could have told you, and he probably did, and you probably did, right?
Yep.
But you still had to apply it. So I could have given you 10 books to go to find the difference, and you probably wouldn't have read them. But in order to really find application for it, you need to have people in your life who helped you come to the understanding, right? Maybe a wonderful relationship with someone who has been implementing the ideas, and you were able to see how she did it, or you were able to see how he did it, or you maybe just had to have it placed in your heart, and you needed to have a relationship with God to help you build trust in the things that you had been hearing. Right? It all came down to you had a need, you had an absolute need. That needed
yes.
to be filled, and the only way you could have that need filled is through some kind of meaningful communication.
Right, and in fact, that's the fifth level is the communication of needs, and we can go through all five of these because you're right, that was where it is that
right.
need.
Let's talk about those five levels. Okay, all of us in this world have needs, and that is the last level. All of us have needs, and there's no way to avoid it. That's the last level. We will not have our needs met until we can understand these levels. The first level is the level of cliches. When we communicate in cliches, hi, how are you? Oh, I'm good. You know, it's such a beautiful day outside. What great weather we're having. Cliches. People say them all the time. You hear them going down the street. Shakespeare actually coined many of the cliches we use. But they don't have a lot of meaning in them. Okay? And that's how you get to know a person, actually. Oh, hi, it's good to meet you. My name is. Those are all cliches. Okay? Then the next level is facts, the communication of facts. I heard the weatherman said that we're going to have snow. I hope it's not too cold. Okay. Or level of fact. In the newspaper today, it said that we had a hearing, a ruling on the homeschool on homeschooling in California. It was very interesting. Well, I should go find out what that is all about. Communication of fact. I'm not talking about what you think of the fact. I'm just talking about a fact. Okay? Lots of people go straight from communicating, oh, I heard that there was this ruling in California, and it was, it said that you had to be a credentialed teacher in order for you to teach your children at home. Don't you think that's awful? That is a communication of opinion, which is the third level. okay, when we come to the level of opinion, you need to be very careful when you're communicating facts, because lots of times we infer our opinions, and if we are talking to somebody who doesn't want to go there with us, they're going to immediately throw up all kinds of walls. If we are just trying to have a nice conversation with someone, we can communicate all kinds of facts and just have a nice little conversation. Now, if we decide to go to the...
At the third level of opinion, we have an opportunity. We call this the door of opportunity.
And if we decide to go to the door of opportunity, we change our conversation from conversation to discussion. If we decide to go through the door of opportunity, okay?
Right, and there's three options that happen here, because at the door of opportunity, it can actually turn into, if you write on your paper, door of opportunity, and put three arrows under it, because it will go one of three ways, depending on both people participating. In the level of opinion, if we are talking to someone who, and all of us have relationships like this and have people in our life, and so I think each of us can relate. Sometimes there will be people who have an opinion and won't hear anyone else's, that their opinion is right and that's all the way, that's all there is to it. Is this the right way to look at it? I'm saying my opinion, this is the way that it is, and there's no room for discussion about another option. If there is, we're going to argue. And what happens if any of us are talking to someone like that, or if we are like that, it can go to conflict if the other person actually states an opinion that is different. It can immediately go to conflict.
Because then it becomes contrary.
Right. It can go right into contrary. If one of the two parties is not open to changing their minds, if they are just right and that's all their way there is to it, even if the other party is very open to actually saying, let's look at it both ways or whatever, if one party is not willing to, it goes to conflict. Now, if you find that you're talking to someone who is like that, and they're usually just like that until their character changes, okay? They won't allow someone else to have a different opinion on whatever they're discussing. The way they see it is the right way, and that's all there is to it. We don't have to have conflict. We can choose to move into the third arrow, okay? The first one is conflict. The third arrow under opportunity is called listening. And we're going to talk all about that. Just want to name listening right now. We'll go into to what that looks like in a second. We can actually listen and understand the person's opinion and have them feel heard. It doesn't have to go to conflict. But sometimes those people, they're used to both types of energy, being listened to and conflict, and they can do both. Do you know what I mean, Anelody?
Right. Yes, exactly.
They're used to both because a lot of people have different opinion and they're used to having conflict. And then they're used to just getting on top of it, and the person they're talking to will usually move to a place of just listening,
right,
or not wanting to talk anymore.
Right.
The middle one under the door of opportunity is actually an opportunity. We call it opportunity, and it goes to two different places. It's an opportunity to really hear the other person and understand the other person. And we just put the big word ask, because we're going to go into the art of asking. And that's when you are discovering on a deeper level what the person that you're talking to is feeling or needing. It's going into where they are sharing their feelings and they are communicating their needs. And there is a way that we, as the other part of the conversation, can help them to help meet their needs.
Right.
And that's one place opportunity to go. The other one is if you are doing the one who has something to communicate and you're going to share your feelings, you're going to communicate about your needs.
And that's when you're using a tell. That's when you're doing a dance here. You know, if the both of you are having a place where you want to go to a place of synergy, and they want to be understood, and you want to be understood because you both have a need to be understood, you're doing a dance of ask and tell, ask and tell, ask and tell. But there may be just a time when you feel that the person you're talking to just needs to have their needs be heard, and that's okay too.
That's right. In fact, that leads us to the thrust of what we're talking about, which is an art of navigating through questions and helping someone find out, to know themselves better sometimes is what it is.
That's right. So let's introduce the last two levels, and then we'll go back to the door of opportunity, which is what we're going to spend most of our time on today. Okay, the fourth level is the communication of feelings.
Yep, sharing feelings.
Sharing your feelings. When you really, because those are, that's your real true self, when you really can get in touch with what you're feeling. And that can be a very vulnerable place. A lot of times for men, it's difficult to even get there because, you know, it's not the macho thing to feel. But not at all men. I'm just generalizing, of course. Some women have the exact same problem. It's a place where you have the only way you can really get to the place of sharing your feelings is if you are in an environment of trust, and you can only be in an environment of trust is if you walk through the door of opportunity together, and it hasn't been a door of conflict. You will never get to that next place if it hasn't looked like a door of opportunity. And the very last level is the communication or the sharing of needs or the meeting of needs, where your needs have been met.
And you can actually talk about needs. You know, I remember having a conversation with when I sat across the desk of Dr. DeMille, and I started to share something, and he I don't know how he learned it, but he just looked right up at me and he said, "Tiffany, do you need me to be a friend right now and listen to you, or do you want me to be a mentor and help you solve it?" And I quickly did a self-check because I did a self-check. What is it I really want him for right now? You know, do I need his understanding to help me solve this, or do I just need to be heard? And
yeah.
I quickly checked myself and I said, I made a choice. I said, I needed to be my mentor. He said, okay, just needed to check. Because do you know what I mean? Because there's times in a conversation where we've got someone who's talking and we're sitting there trying to solve their problem because we know how to solve it, but that's not what they want.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what
they
I think?
Be heard.
There are some people who cannot be mentored. In my opinion, being mentored is actually going straight to needs. It really is, because you need information, or you need a problem solved, or you need to know where to go next, right?
Yeah.
And some mentors have this amazing art that they can go straight through the door of opportunity. They can hear you. They can listen to you. They can you express your feeling. And as soon as you get to that feeling, there's this beautiful synergy that happens between the two of you, and then they can nail what you need. Okay? There are other mentors who just say, "Tell me what you need, and I'll tell you what I'll tell you what you know. Tell me what your needs are, and I'll tell you what to do." And sometimes you have to just go with that, right?
Yeah.
If you're trying to be mentored. You just have to go with, I have a need, and they have the answer, and he doesn't want to take time, or she doesn't want to take time with me to do this dance.
Well, here's something else, though. Usually, the mentor, the reason why they're your mentor is because they can actually see the real need, and oftentimes in a mentorial relationship, the mentee doesn't know their real need.
Exactly.
Honestly, sometimes the job of the mentor is to say, here's what it is you need. Because when we get to the place, an opportunity where, you know, we've got the thing over here where we're going to ask or where we have need, okay, there's three things we have to do. If, say, I want to have a conversation with my husband and there's been something and we need to communicate about it. There's three things that should happen first if I hope it's going to go well.
Are you talking about when we're at the third level at the door of opportunity?
Yes, yes.
So let's say where we've backed up, we're going to the door of opportunity, and we have three things we have to do, okay?
Yes, there's three things we have to do when we're going to go communicate something to someone. The first thing is to quiet ourselves and know ourselves. And that's what Oliver did to me right then when he said to me, Tiffany, do you need me to listen to you right now as a friend, or do you want me to actually tell you what your need is? You know what I mean? Help you
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
What he did is he made me quiet myself and know myself.
And he asked you to go there, and you know what, Tiffany? You were willing to do it. Some
right.
people aren't.
Right. Yes, some people, it's not easy to do this step. But if
we
want to talk to a child or a student or our spouse and we're specifically going to go have a conversation about something, this is... should always be done first. To
it's
really know...
Yeah. You're exactly right. You know, whenever we had that call several months ago on the different levels of vibration that we vibrate at, and we talked about how anything over a 200 was a positive vibration and anything under a 200 was a negative vibration.
Right, like shame, guilt, fear, pride,
fear.
Blame. Yeah, all
right.
of that is a negative vibration, right?
So here's the thing. You can get into a situation, you can come to this door of opportunity, and if you don't quiet yourself, you may go straight to the level of pride, which gives you all kinds of criticism and judgment against this person, and you will never really be able to hear the person because you're criticizing and judging because you're prideful.
And what it does is it moves you, this is really important, it moves you into a place of proof. Yo-Yo Ma explains this so well. Yo-Yo Ma plays the cello. He's a musician.
Tell this story, Tiffany.
You have to tell about it. You have to tell
okay.
about it.
All right.
I'm so thankful you've introduced me to Yo-Yo Ma.
I'm a cello teacher, and I'm always looking for things to inspire my students. And so I was perusing the internet the other day, and you guys are welcome to do this. I was perusing the internet. I happen to love Yo-Yo Ma. He's one of my favorite performers. I've read a few short clips of biographies of him. I've never really heard him speak, but I've heard him play a ton. And I listen almost every new album that comes out. I own it because I love it. And the other day, I was just asking myself, why do I love him? Why is, you know, there are many other cellists out there who could be loved, who are just as good. And so I was asking myself, what does he do that's unique to me? Why is it that everything he plays just pierces my heart? And so I went on the internet to look, and I discovered a clip on YouTube that really, really explained things to me. He told the story... They showed this clip of him playing at 7 years old in the Kennedy Center. Well, it was a fundraiser for the Kennedy Center. He was called by Washington, D.C., and he was playing for President Kennedy and his wife. And he's 7 years old. He walks out on stage just like a great performer. He sits down and he plays this really cute piece. You know, it wasn't anything terribly advanced. But, you know, he's 7 years old. What can you expect? But it was, you know, this air of, you know, I have something to give you. And that made him a great performer. So, and then they show this clip of him talking. And he said, you know, when I was a young kid, I was untouchable. I was unshakable. Nobody could tell me I was good or bad. And it didn't really matter, you know. I was nerves of steel. I'd walk out, I'd do my thing, and I'd walk off, and I said, okay, it's over, let's go. He said, but when I was 16 years old, I met Isaac Stern, and Isaac Stern came to me and said, we want to do this series of concerts in Carnegie Hall, and we want to know if you want to be part of us. And he's thinking, wow, amazing opportunity. He said, but the problem is, I had been exposed to the hierarchy of judges.
And it became about himself, and that he had to prove himself.
Yeah, he said, I was in a place of having to prove myself, and he says,
and it shook him.
It shook me. And he said, Isaac Stern was a great mentor to me and opened many, many doors for me, but he said it was so painful to perform because I was always shaken. I was always scared. I was always thinking, what are they thinking of me? I was having to prove myself. He said, then I started to work with this young man. His name was Bobby McFerrin. Maybe some of you are familiar with the CD they've cut. It is delightful. It's the funnest CD. And Bobby McFerrin is a vocalist. He says, I started working with Bobby McFerrin. And Bobby said to me one time when we were playing, he said, you know, you just got to be yourself. You just got to be okay with who you are. And Yo-Yo Ma said all of a sudden he understood. It had nothing to do with I have something to prove. It says, I realize I have something to share. I don't have anything to prove. I have something to share. And please, can I please share it? I probably am not going to use the right vocabulary. And I probably am not going to say it in the words that you want to hear it. But can I just please share? I have something to share. And then it shows this clip of him playing with Prague Symphony. And the music starts out in this minor key, and it's gloomy, and he's hunched over his cello, and he's digging into it, and it comes to a beautiful resolution, this concerto. At the very end, it comes to this major melodic chord, and you can feel the music making this full circle from depression and gloom to some kind of a message of hope. And you see Yo-Yo Ma lifting his head. He looks up into heaven, and there's tears streaming down his eyes. He's got this beautiful smile on his face, and he's pulling his bow out as far as it will go. And he's just milking the vibrato to the very last piece, the very last note that he can pull out on the edge of that bow. There's this moment of silence. He's communicated to me, and my heart is moved to a place of joy and love. That's the place we want to be in our communications with each other. And it all has to do with, we don't have something to prove. We don't have to. We don't have to prove anything. If we could just go to a place of sharing, sharing what we know, sharing what we feel. The only way we can do that is if the listener is willing to go there with you. And if you're willing to go, and you have to know how to, you have to know how to sense that. So you have to, we talked about the three things you have to do. First, you have to quiet yourself and know yourself. Yo-Yo Ma finally got to a place where he could quiet himself and say, oh, I know what it is. I have something to share. Then you have to make a decision. Yes, then you have to make a decision. You have to make this decision. Will I go to a place of trust?
Will I share myself, or am I going to prove myself? That's where you make the decision of, am I going to have the attitude of proving, or am I going to have the attitude of sharing? And you actually make the decision.
And this is a real place of humility. This is the true place of humility. You have to decide, am I going to let down my pride? Am I going to admit when I'm wrong? Or am I going to just, you know, give all the excuses and stay in the place of pride? You can do that.
Yep. And then three, what happens is, once you know yourself and have chosen to share, is you can now share opinions and feelings and needs.
Right, and you can walk through the door of opportunity. You can actually walk through it. And Tiffany and I want to talk to you about what it feels like. We've talked about if you go to opinions, you can have conflict. It can be a door of conflict, and you can just be conflicting all you want, right? And it can just be dammed up and stopped. You can do that, and you can live your life that way. And you can have half of your conversations like that. Okay, you can, but we want to talk specifically about what it feels like to walk through the door of opportunity successfully.
You know, it's when you say what it feels like, it's really amazing. As we discussed this content and what we wanted to cover today, and I realized, you know, there's a lot of people who come up to my family. I have a really large family, lots of brothers and sisters. I have a large family, and lots of people will come up to us and say, there's something about your family that's grabbed my attention. When I watch you guys together, and this has happened from the time I was little, all our life, my brothers and sisters and I, all our life growing up, friends would flock at our home. And when we would do family activities and family home evening and things like this, we always had lots of friends who joined us. Whichever one of us was the youth and the teenager in the home, those were the friends that would often be with us. And it was part of our family culture to invite them in and let them be part of us in these activities. And always people would say, there's something about your family. Well, I realized, as we talked about this, that one of the things that my family does, I was on a business call with all my brothers and sisters and my mom and dad yesterday morning, and we were discussing a family business that we have, and we were having a meeting. And before my dad opened up the meeting, my little sister Sarah said, "Tiff, how's your dog Lady?" And she immediately went into, she wanted to know how she was. She was concerned about me and about my dog. And I said, "Oh my gosh, Sarah, you haven't heard." And she said, "Heard what?" And I said, and "How's her puppies?" I said, "Honey, her puppies died. They when they were born, they died. They weren't even alive. And Lady died." And my sister immediately, I could hear her, she said, "Ah!" And for five minutes, my whole family listened. They just listened. They listened to me share my feelings about us losing our dog this week and what it was like and how she died and how it was delivering the puppies and what happened with the family and you know, and I was able to share. And they just listened. And they just felt for a minute. And then we, you know, went into our meeting. And I thought, I think that's one of the things why people say there's something about your family, Tiffany. And I realized it was because we share and we listen to each other and we really care. And it's a safe place.
Yeah, it can be very frustrating, though, because you may be in a relationship with someone who just doesn't want to share. And you want to share.
Yeah.
And you will never be heard by them because they don't feel, they aren't willing to know themselves. They aren't willing to look at themselves. And I have discovered something, Tiffany. You remember we talked a little bit about what Mortimer Adler says, the three jobs of a teacher is to show and then to ask and then to tell. And I have realized that, you know, when I show what it is like to people who don't want to go there with me, when I show them what it's like to have a good relationship or a good conversation by setting an example first, sometimes they're willing to start going there with me.
Yeah. In fact, when we're in the opportunity and it's time to listen to someone else and help them, you know, and we go to the ask place, there's a way to navigate through the questions. There's an art to this, to actually hearing somebody and understanding somebody.
Let's talk about that, yeah. Navigating. What does it feel to navigate through this door?
And I'll give an example of this. That same family meeting that I was at yesterday, my dad opened up the meeting and shared, okay? He started by sharing something. And I could sense and feel that he was just opening the door, and he hadn't just gone right to his feelings or right to his needs. And so what happened is we were now engaging in understanding what he was communicating, and I, on purpose, engaged in asking. And
let me point something out here, Tiffany. Your father could have said, I have a need. And he could have said, blah, 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 whatever that need was. And everyone else could have said, oh, that's nice, and gone on to something else. But no, you made a decision, Tiffany. You wanted to hear, because just the first time you communicate a need, usually it isn't heard. It usually has to be talked about and go through this navigating to really understand what the need is, and you decided to go there. So tell me how you did that.
Okay. And he expressed, he said, I have to decide if I'm going to give 100% of my attention to this person over here who was part of the business, okay? But it could take away a little bit of what our family was doing. So he said that. He said, I have to make a really important decision on if I'm going to teach for so-and-so. It will be a huge commitment. That's what he says. And it was going to impact our family. And so we listened. All of us listened. And let me list these four things that happen when we navigate through questions, okay? First of all, is we can ask something, we listen, and then here's a choice. If we already know how to sense, then we sense and reiterate what's being said, okay? And guide through questioning. If we don't know how to sense yet, then we reiterate what's been said and do our best to sense what's really being meant. Oftentimes, we do not say what we mean.
And sometimes
we
have to
say lots of things. Yes, it's a cycle. We do it over and over and over. Ask and listen, reiterate and sense, or sense and reiterate. Because
could we give an example of this, you and I?
Yes.
Let's start here, okay? I'm going to start a conversation, and you're going to try to figure out where I'm going, okay, with me and you. Okay, here we go. Wow, I had an interesting experience the other day.
Tell me about it.
Well, I was a really good friend, and he needed some help, but I felt this real reluctance to talk to him.
Well, why were you reluctant to talk to him?
I was a little bit afraid of him. I think I was a little afraid of him. I'm not sure. Maybe I was nervous because, I'm just thinking maybe I was nervous because, you know, he's a man and he was asking for my help, and I didn't feel like I could do that. And
you really value his friendship.
Yeah, I really value his friendship. I really do. I'm thinking that if I had just, you know what I'm really thinking? You know, the experience was, it was interesting because I don't think I handled it very well. We kind of got into an argument at the end. You know,
I'm so sorry. Oh, I hate it when that happens.
I know. No, I'm trying to figure out how I could have done it differently.
What do you think you could have done?
Well, I think I know what I did. I think I know what I did. This is what he said to me. He said, I was disappointed the other day because when I wanted to talk to you, you weren't available to me, and I needed something to say. And I said to him, "I know I probably did this wrong." I said,
"You made excuses, didn't you?"
I did. I did. Yeah. I totally said, "Well, I didn't. You know, I wasn't sure if you wanted to talk to me, and my sister wanted to talk to me. She wanted my time, and I." And
yeah.
Then,
so instead of hearing him and saying, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I should have been there," you made excuses.
Mm-hmm.
And then he probably matched you.
I bet he did.
Yeah,
that's
probably
exactly
went into the blame game.
Yeah.
Oh, Melody, I'm so sorry.
What can I do to fix it?
It's kind of like, I don't know, it's so hard with relationships because when water goes past that certain point, you can't retrieve it. I hate to say that. Sometimes you can't retrieve it. Sometimes it could be months and months. I mean, opportunities come, and sometimes we just really mess them up at the same time.
Should I create an opportunity?
Yeah, sometimes you can. Yeah.
Should I call him and say, "I am so sorry we had that argument"?
Yeah, you definitely could, especially if it's really on your mind and you feel like you ought to.
I'm not exactly sure how to make that happen.
Well, and part of what you want to do is to make sure some things don't happen. You don't want to fall under the temptations of criticizing or blaming. You really want to move into the place of courage where you admit that you were wrong and then just do a lot of listening and loving and accepting.
I just think I'm afraid. I do. I think I'm afraid that I'm going to screw it up again.
You know what? You don't have anything to prove, Melody. You just have something to share. And
okay.
Then you won't be afraid.
Okay. All right. I'm going to do it. Thank you.
Okay.
That was a spur-of-the-moment, made-up conversation.
I know, but it's really real. That's how we talk. We ask, we listen, we hear and reiterate and ask further questions. It's in conversations when someone is speaking we have to help them get to a need. It's work to navigate through the questions.
And my need in that conversation was I wanted to repair a relationship, but I was afraid to.
Yeah, and you needed to externally analyze how you could.
Right.
Some people are external processors. Some people are internal processors and won't have a conversation like that with you no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's important to understand, too. Like, I process externally. I can do a lot of internal processing, too, but to really come to a head, I've got to process externally. My husband, on the other hand, he can help me process externally, but it is, like, so rare if he processes externally.
Externally.
Yeah, he can help me, and he knows how to do that. I don't think we could have a great relationship. But he processes internally, and I've had to learn how to just be quiet.
While
he
processes through it,
yeah.
And does this art of navigating through this door of questioning, does it help him at all?
Well, it helps us know the right questions that we are asking, but as far as him navigating through the questions when we're asking them, he just usually has to be quiet. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd have to really think about if I do navigating through questions with him. I know that.
I'll tell you right now.
The right questions.
My husband in our relationship is an internal processor too. But I realized, Tiffany, I realized that if I follow this ask, listen, reiterate, sense with him, and be humble and teachable, that our communication really, really soars. Because he has feelings.
Yeah.
And it's just an art. It's just a place of communicating our feelings, getting to that place. And he has needs. It has, and it really, it doesn't matter if I'm an internal processor or external processor. It doesn't matter. It's a communication.
Yes, yes, that's absolutely true. And it's true. And Rick will share his feelings and his needs. He usually will process quietly to figure them out.
I realize that when we get to this place, this door of opportunity, that sometimes we both have needs.
Yes.
Sometimes the person speaking just has a need, and I need to listen. Just, you know, like Oliver said to you, is this something I need to listen to you? Because he didn't really have a need. You had a need. And sometimes I have a need, and I need to figure out how to communicate it. And the only way I can do it is to get them to a place of trust.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Let's look at the diagram that we have, and then open this up for question and answers. We've got several lists here. We've got the list of the five levels of communication: cliche, facts, opinion, sharing of feelings, communication of needs. And then at the level three that goes to the door of opportunity, you've got three ways you can go. You've got conflict, if one of them is in an argumentative mood and the other one actually shares an opinion that conflicts, okay? And then you've got just listening, where you're going to listen to them because they don't allow you to have a different opinion, but you're going to go ahead and ask and listen and reiterate and ask and listen and reiterate. And you know, that can only go so far when they're not open. It's just a certain level that it will be capped at.
Right.
Or you can go into opportunity, where you go into understanding them and navigating through questions and leading them to ahas and meeting their needs and feeling their feelings.
I'll tell you, there are some people who you can never lead to an aha ever, because that's not your job. Your job is to listen and to be their friend and never teach.
Right.
Never try to purposely teach.
Right.
But this really is the Socratic method. This is exactly what Socrates was trying to teach, is that if we learn the art of asking, we can teach.
Right.
Because we can get people to new levels of understanding by just asking. Ask.
Well, it was really interesting in the family business meeting that I was in, when my dad explained the need that he was trying to solve. He said, I have to decide if I'm going to teach to this other person. We listened. I said, Dad, what would that look like? And he told us what it would look like. He said, it would look like probably 3 hours of work every day. It would look like a whole bunch of answering calls for people. It would look like I have to do what I'm teaching, which is another 2 hours a day. I mean, you know, he told us what it looked like. And I was sensing things as he was talking, okay? I was hearing more than what he was just saying. And I asked a question. I said, Dad, I sense that you actually are a little bit frustrated, and that you actually also wish that some of us would be in your class. If you teach that class, you wish some of us would take it. Am I sensing that right, that you're a little bit frustrated that we're not jumping on board? And he said, yes, you're exactly right. He said, I really wish you guys would do this with me. And that was his deeper need.
That is a true art, Tiffany. Yeah, that is what you are definitely good at. This is a skill. You know,
it's a skill to hear what's not being said, but what is being meant.
Mortimer Adler says the skill of listening, true listening, we don't teach, and very few people learn.
And I'll tell you, here is what it is. Hear what is meant, not what is said. Do not rely only on the words. You actually have to open yourself up to the feelings, to your intuition, to their actions, their body language, their tone of voice. It's all of it. You have to use all of your senses, not just the words that are said. Very few people communicate what they mean.
Right. And that's why we say you reiterate, you don't repeat. Because if you repeat, you're just using their
own
words.
Right.
You have to own their words and reiterate in your own words what they've said.
Right, because it can get to a place of truer communication if you do that. And
yeah.
With our kids, it is so important. Like my son says, he said, Mom, why don't you want me to get a computer right now? He says, I think it's okay. And I said, I don't think you really are asking me to tell you why we don't think it's a good idea for you to buy a computer right now. I think what you're really telling me is you want a computer, dang it. and he just looked at me, yeah. And I said, do you know what I mean? You can sit there. He was saying, why can't I have a computer? He did not mean that. He didn't mean why.
He meant, Mom, I need a computer and I want one.
Yes, exactly. And so with our children, it's so important. It's so important that we actually hear what they mean, because we could stay all day long in the cycle of the words and not get anywhere.
Yeah.
Instead of hearing what they mean, and being okay, going, this is what they really mean. When she came in and threw down her backpack and slammed the door, she meant something's wrong. My feelings are hurt, and I'm expressing it to you by throwing down my backpack and slamming the door. And now I'm going to go be mean to my little sister and express it even more. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very good. And
okay,
these
so
all,
these lists.
These are all places, you know, in our relationship where we are mentor-mentees.
Yeah, it's totally fulfilling when we go in to help meeting someone else's needs, just as fulfilling it is when we share.
Exactly.
They're both really fulfilling. So here we have also the list of what we do if we're going to engage in the conversation on purpose. Oh, this is important.
I want to share a conversation I had. I'm not going to name names because some of you might know this person. So, but I want to share this conversation I had. Just to help, I'm going to give you a vision a little bit about a mentoring experience I had last night. I got a phone call, and it was an acquaintance, a friend, a very good friend of mine. And the person on the line said, I'm calling you because you're so liber and you're wise. What do you think he just did to me?
I would immediately have a red flag. If somebody said that to me, I would.
As soon as someone said that to me, he was saying to me, I need help.
He was saying, I need help. But I would immediately say to myself, I better start listening and not start spewing. That's the red flag.
That's exactly what I did. And I said,
okay.
Oh, okay. Yes. And yeah, I exactly. Red flag, something's up. Right, okay.
Yeah, he doesn't mean he wants me to give him all this knowledge. That's not
right.
He did not just say what he means.
That's right.
So okay, that red flag.
Well, oh, what's up? And he said, he told me some of his feelings, okay?
Good.
And I said, you're saying to me this. He says, yes.
Very
and
good.
I listened carefully, and he says, but, you know, besides that, let's go here. And for an hour and a half, we did this dance of communication. And I have to tell you, I love this man with all my heart and soul. He has been such a good friend of mine. And finally, at the very end of the conversation, he came to, I just want to know what you think I should do. You know, an hour and a half of this. And I said, well, you just told me what you're going to do, huh? Yeah, I did. I guess that's what you're going to do then. And really, all he needed to do was externally process it through it. He really didn't need my input, although I did give him a place of trust and an environment of where he could work it out, and all I did was give him an environment of ask, reiterate, ask, and he came to
He actually told that to you in the first sentence. That's what I heard when he said, you're Liber and you're wise, and so I need you. To me, that was, I need to externally process and talk and make sure I'm on target.
Right. And Daphne,
yeah,
really, all I did was go through this process. Ask, listen, reiterate, sense. Ask, listen, reiterate, sense. As long as I followed through with that, and of course, you know, it's part of sharing myself. He needed to know I was real, and he needed to hear my experiences. So I did some telling of my experiences.
Yeah.
But he came to his own aha. It was a great opportunity for me to mentor a friend.
Yeah.
And I had no agenda.
And I had, that really matter.
I really had no opinion.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to complete these lists for us. We have the one where if we're going to move into conversation, we quiet ourselves and we choose whether or not we're going to prove or share. Sometimes if we've been hurt, then we say, I'm going to stay in this place of hurt, and I'm going to prove to them. You know, sometimes we want to choose to stay in that place instead
of
actually...
I've been offended, it's your fault, and there's nothing you can do to get me off of that.
Yeah. And I'm going to have this conversation, and I'm going to show you that you were wrong or that you hurt me or whatever. And you know what? Sometimes we are pretty dumb and we go into conversations with that attitude.
Or we get caught in the conversations with somebody else in that attitude and we don't know what's happened. We got blindsided.
Oh, can I just tell you how much I love my husband for this? If his answers are always so soft, he softens me immediately. If I'm coming in, he just keeps on answering with soft, 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 and pretty soon I'm soft. And we can be like that. I've learned the art from him. That if I get in a conversation with somebody who's in an upset place because they haven't taken the time to quiet themselves, they haven't taken the time to say, I'm going to share myself, instead I'm going to prove something. I've learned from my husband how to be soft and not match their blaming and upsetness. And that's
a lot
our,
of courage. It takes a
it
lot
does.
Of courage. You have to not be a place of pride.
It does. I remember hearing my grandma tell me a story. Her son was married and the daughter-in-law came over. Very, very explosive woman. Okay? And she had a rough background. She saw her parents' death when she was 16. She witnessed their death, and it was a murder death. Very, very harsh background. Wonderful, wonderful aunt of mine. And she came over to my grandma, very explosive, stormed through the house. My grandma saw her coming.
Okay.
You know, stomped her way into the living room, started to yell and say, you raised your son wrong, and you did this, and you did this, and you did this, and just, you know, totally blaming, yelling, upset. My grandma threw her arms out, reached across the room, and hugged my aunt and said, I know, you're right. I'm sorry. She just was soft. What could my aunt do? She usually wasn't received that way when she would barge in and start yelling at people. They were usually really defensive. I mean, she couldn't do anything except melt and then become real and share. And so sometimes that's what we do.
That is a true test of character, Tiffany, because I'll tell you what, the first reaction most people have when someone comes in and yelling at them, they put up all their defenses and they want to start yelling back.
Yeah.
What an amazing woman that she could be in a place where she could just say, oh, I'm so sorry, you're right, I'm wrong.
I did work a lot of hours and wasn't there for my son, and I just admitted everything. I just was humble.
And you know what? That's really hard because...
Yeah.
That's just really, really hard. And you know what? Sometimes it's really, really painful, too, to be able to go to a place of humility like that.
Sometimes
you
it's
know,
hard to be told when you're wrong. I
you
think
know,
that it...
You're exactly right. And And you know what? Sometimes they just want to tell you you're wrong, and you just have to admit you're wrong, and they'll never really truly understand your motive.
Yeah, and it's not a good idea to give excuses at that point. It's a good idea to listen at that point. Okay, here's the list of navigating through questions. Asking questions with the hope of really understanding where the other what the other person is really meaning, okay? Sometimes you won't ask a question of what the words were, but what you are intuiting that they mean. You can do either one. You can ask according to their words, or you can ask according to all of it. And then listen and sense and reiterate, or reiterate and sense again. And there's that list. And the other list that we went through is that there's a level of negative energy when you have guilt, fear, pride, shame, or are blaming and criticizing. Sometimes we can move into a conversation and take it to a negative place where we are very, very critical, and it will have a negative energy, or we can move into a courageous place and an acceptance place. Were there any other things that we covered that... I think that was it. Should we open it up to questions, Anelody?
Yes, let's do. Or Tiffany? Or give the comment.
Yes, I have a question.
Okay, who is this?
This is Kim Timmerman.
Oh, hi, Kim.
Hello. I have a question regarding a little bit of the Mars and Venus subject. Because we've had this Mars... you explained all of this, but I think I'm wondering if men are a little different than women in all of this communication pattern. And
well, first of all, oftentimes they want to solve a problem instead of listening. And so as women, and here's what women want. Women want them to guess the problem instead of telling them. So those two things right there can make you stumble, because a woman doesn't want to say, she wants the husband to already know, okay? A woman doesn't want to say, okay, honey, I just need you to listen to me and hold me and let me cry right now, or I just want you to listen to me and don't solve it. If a woman would, first of all, say that, it will give the husband a really good chance to say, oh, you don't want me to just solve it. Does that make sense, Kim?
Tiffany, I want to tell Kim this. The book that Tiffany and I are getting a lot of our information out of is called Secrets to Lasting Love by Gary Smalley, and it's a book about communication between men and women. If you're interested...
To masking love?
Lasting.
Lasting.
Lasting love.
And a lot of the stuff we taught, too, is our own stuff.
Yeah, it's our own stuff. But the levels of communication are in that book. If you're interested in getting to know how to... make this happen between you and your husband, that's what the whole book is all about. We just took it and took it to a level of mentoring between, you know, taking it out
of that.
But
Kim, ask your second question. I feel like you have another question.
So you are being intuitive again. I'm not sure if I know my second question. I just feel that the conversation you've had, every principle is a true skill and a true principle, I know. But I do know that men are more literal. And so when they are talking, you know, I'm not sure if I know the question I'm asking. So I think I'm
can I reiterate what you just said? You're saying men are more literal, and women are more figurative. That's what you're implying, right? And that that women aren't going to specifically communicate their need or their feelings, and it has to be roundabout come to, and that men are going to specifically communicate their feelings because they're literal. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I'm so sorry, I'm not. My thought is, in these skills, there seems to be a skill that is missing. And maybe there is a little more of the understanding of the differences the inherent marvelous differences between men and women. And so
I'll tell you right now what I've learned. I told you what I've learned, Kim. It's called the difference between pride and acceptance. Because women want their feelings to be heard, and their needs to be met. And so if the spouse, the husband, isn't picking up on it, it makes them feel prideful and angry instead of accept that that's where they are.
Yes, sometimes that can happen. You know, it's, and one of the principles here when we are communicating with our spouses, and sometimes the woman and or the man, either of them, can choose to go into the conversation trying to prove something instead of sharing. But if we communicate, I want to share something with you and I want you to understand my feelings and it's not about solving anything. This is a principle to actually communicate that up front. And it helps the other person know, just like when Dr. DeMille said to me, Tiffany, do you want me to listen and be your friend, or do you want me to be your mentor? It helps if when we're engaging in the conversation, if we let them know, because we've chosen to know ourselves first and say, I need you to actually mentor me and help me with the direction I'm going to go, or to say, I need you to just listen to me for a while and understand what's been going on in my life.
And really, that's the skill of quieting yourself and knowing yourself, because sometimes women just want to they want to have a conversation with their spouse, and they don't want to have to think about it, and they just want to be spewing, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? I have discovered that and I'm just that way. I like to regurgitate, and I don't want to even have to think about what I'm saying to him. But I discovered that I have to be very careful in my communications with my spouse. I have to be very thoughtful. And
I'm so glad you brought that up.
That is the most important relationship for me, to be thoughtful before I speak.
Yeah, and I want to bring this up. Sometimes we justify that we can say something just because it's true. And here's a big difference with a core faith principle. Because, you know, they talk about right, wrong, true, false, bad, good. There are levels that just because something is true, it's not right to say it or do it. What I mean by this is, I have a friend that her sister-in-law calls her and tells her, it gets in a great conversation, they have a good conversation for the first half hour, and then the sister-in-law moves into, did you know what your father-in-law said about you, or your sister-in-law, or your brother-in-law, and let me just tell you this because it's true that
because
they were
I'm
saying
your friend
these things.
And
I'm your friend. And sometimes, and Kim, this has nothing to do with what you asked. I'm just saying this because Melody brought it up. Sometimes we have to think before we talk and say, if I say this thing to them, is it going to inspire them to be better, or is it going to plunge them into a negative space? And I try to have conversations that would only inspire somebody to do and be better. And sometimes, yes, that means reprimanding. But it never means criticizing or gossiping or blaming. And in our relationships with our spouses, we have to be thoughtful and say, if I say this to him, if I say this to her, is it going to uplift them and empower them to be their very best? Or is it going to actually take away and weaken them?
Yeah.
That takes a lot of self-discipline to say that to yourself before
you
speak.
I'm the kind of person, Tiffany, and it's so true. It takes so much discipline because I am so bad at it. I just blurt out things. You know, I have to tell you this huge faux pas, this huge, huge mistake I made. I was standing in a group of people, and we were getting to know each other. Okay, I was the teacher. Hello, what the heck was I thinking? You know, there was these 8-10 people around. We went around, I'm so-and-so, and I'm this, and I'm the mother of this, and I'm the father of this, whatever. And we got to this one young man. He says, my name is so-and-so. I'm from Canada. I'm 30 years old. I don't have any children. And I, such an idiot, I want to kill myself. I said, you're 30 and you're not married? Oh, my God.
Right. And that
open
totally
mouth,
could have
hurt. Insert foot. But you know what I did? You know what I did? Okay, so test of my character. I totally sensed that I hurt his feelings. After the conversation, I came up to him and I said, "I am so sorry. I hurt your feelings. I know I did. I am so sorry. Please forgive me. Please, can you forgive me?" And
yeah.
He put his arms around me and he said, "I forgive you." And do you know that that was the start of one of the best relationships I have ever had?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So there's
Kim, I don't know if we answered all of your questions.
Actually, that last discussion. Thank
Sorry,
you. Yes, you did.
Okay.
Okay.
Could I share a comment here?
Yes.
This
must
Ken.
Be Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, guys. I read a book a number of years ago that I thought was very insightful about men and women communications. It's called You Just Don't Understand by Dr. Deborah Tannen. And she made an interesting point, several interesting points. One was that men live in a world where they're either reporting to or being reported to. So it's about reporting. And so their communication is based on reporting, the facts. Women want rapport, which is a vastly different issue.
Yes.
So men are looking for, just give me the facts. Women sort of want to emotionally put it all on the table and get their hands in it and feel each other's pain and emotions.
Right.
And that those two different approaches are so night and day difference that it gets in the way of men and women communicating frequently.
And I'll tell you, Ken, what I've discovered in my communications with men is they do just want the facts and they want to stay at that level because it's difficult for them to go to the door of conflict or the door of opportunity because not very often are they required to do that in the workplace.
Exactly. It makes it challenging. So one other comment I just make about communication, I think that for one to take advantage of the opportunity you've talked about today, one truly has to lose themselves, as the scripture talks about. They have to go to a state of zero ego, that they know they're protected and okay, and therefore they can really be there for the other person.
Yeah. Yes, trust. Very good. I like that. Zero ego. Zero ego. Wow. Wow.
Yes, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What, being very comfortable reporting and then being with someone who actually wants to have a rapport and stuff, what helps you go there?
I think I was listening and just thinking actually about that.
What's the
that.
Best thing your wife could do to trigger you being willing to go there?
You actually said it earlier. I think because men are so steeped in their thinking, their whole processing is about a structure of reporting, that if their wife would simply say, "Honey, I just need some time with you where you can just listen. I don't want you to fix anything. I want you just to be there and just let me just speak," and maybe say, "Oh, uh-huh," then that would go light years, because the man's mind is into this one mode of, "I'm being reported to, or I'm having to report to, I have to solve the problem and move on, I've got to hurry and get it done." When she's saying, "I just want you to take time to be with me, and it's not about the facts, it's about the experience," that really helps.
Yeah. So being thoughtful before you have a conversation.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
Being thoughtful before you have the conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, and communicating where you're hoping to go.
Yeah. One of the things I think all of us do, we assume that everybody else thinks like we do, and that's just not true. And so unspoken assumption, that tacit assumption, we believe that our spouse or this other person is going to process or think like we do. Therefore, when they don't, we somehow feel unloved, unappreciated, unvalued, and disconnected, when that's not necessarily true.
Yeah. Or judged. Yeah.
Thank you, Ken.
Welcome.
I want to point something out here. The reason why we think that, Tiffany and I think that the art of communication is so vitally important is because of several of the educational philosophers that we have studied in the past have conjectured that all learning is done through some kind of communication. And if we don't know how to communicate on a high level of love, learning isn't going to happen in our homes. It's not going to happen in our communities. It's not going to happen in us.
Melody?
Yes.
This is Tati.
Hi, Tati.
Hi. I'm just listening here with Wendy, and I just had a comment. In Hebrew, the letter for doorway, you guys have been mentioning a lot about opening the door and stuff like that. The letter for doorway is D or Dalet. And in the Hebrew, with the way that they teach their children the alphabet is by teaching them the symbolism of every letter in the order in which they follow. And so the letter before the symbol for door is Gimel, which means the mercy. And so when you open up the door, you have to have mercy at the other end. Otherwise, you can't open up the door. And so oftentimes, when you're just saying doorway, to me, it always means whenever time I try to open the door or knock on the door, then I had better be ready to extend a hand of mercy or I'm not going to get where I need to get.
That's beautiful, Tati. Thank you for sharing that.
Melody?
Yes.
This is Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
Do we have time? Or do you need...
Yeah, go on.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll just be quick. Because I've been listening to all of this, and as I've been dealing with my own class this year, which has been probably one of the biggest struggles in terms of teaching I think I've ever encountered... I mean, things aren't going bad. It should have been very different for many reasons. But I've been reflecting as I've been listening that we live in this world that's very fast-paced, and everything is very immediate. And we want everything immediate.
Mm-hmm.
We want to fix everything immediately because we don't have time to take. We don't have time to slow down and have people figure out where they are. Or quiet themselves. We just got to handle the problem. And there's a time and a place for that. Don't get me wrong. But one of the things our show is opening next Thursday, and I'm in the process of really making sure that there's lots of synergy, in the cast and everything else. And so I had a bunch of people I had to call, and just kind of talk to about their show. The bottom line is, I'm looking at my schedule going, okay, I got 3 people to call. In a half an hour, I can handle this. And I should have some time left over. Well, an hour later, I was almost done. And the thing is, if you're going to do this, it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger thing here is that I really believe that there is an adversary. And I believe that one of the things that he is trying to do to pull down powerful people is to make us believe that we don't have the time to take to communicate to people and to get people to a place of love and trust where we can hear each other, because that's going to pull us down faster than almost anything else. If we don't feel like we're being heard, if we don't feel like we're loved, if we don't feel like anyone out there cares anymore or it's impossible to communicate, I mean, it's really easy to just give up.
Wow.
And it's just important to hang in there, and it's going to take more time.
Thank you. Yeah. Ditto.
Sharon,
you're exactly right. I know a young man who's already got into that habit of, I don't have time to invest in that in relationships. I've got too much to do. Just realize that. Wow. And then
Sherry, it's so important what you just shared. Thank you so much for sharing that.
And then how can we be effective? How can we have any impact if we won't invest? Wow.
And you know what? It's the book, The Whole New Mind, that talks about businesses of the 21st century and how we have moved from the age of information into, they don't have the definitive name for the age we've moved into. It's been called biological age. It's been called the age of relationships. It's been called several things. We'll see what it ends up being called. But one of the biggest needs and one of the areas of businesses will be the human touch and story, because people are so segregated from each other, they are starved for time, for the love that comes when someone invests time. It's a huge need.
Tiffany.
Okay.
This is Deborah Kingdon.
Hi, Deborah.
Hey, I wish I would have had this lesson before this week. I had a lady at my school that she has a very low physical affect, and she blurts things and then just stares at you. And I never know what to say to her. I just stand there and go, and? You know, and wondering, what do you want? I don't know. But this last time that she did this to me, I had a sense of what her true problem was, but I was so shaken by her affect that I just shut down and just said, I'm sorry, I don't know what you want. I don't know how to help you. And I wish I would have instead said, I can see you're really bothered by, because I think I really did know what she was bothered by.
Deborah, I encourage you to have the courage.
I am going to go back and talk to her now after listening to you guys today, but I was just like kicking myself sitting there listening to you guys and going, oh, man, I wish this would have been last Saturday's call.
And, you know, I got to tell you, Deborah, we're not perfect at it either, you know. We're going to make the same.
We're glad we get to review it every year.
Yeah, we are.
Well, thank you very much. It really helped a lot. I think that it's going to help me to fix this problem.
Thank you for sharing.
I think it's going to help me fix a problem I have, too. After I reviewed it today, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I've got to fix that.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks for those who commented and asked questions, too. Bye-bye.
Bye.